at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Okay.
Can't do it.
That early. Here we go. Yeah. Oh, whoops. It would help if the sound was panned.
You've got it. You've got it. All right, you are go. You've got it.
Sea to sea.
All right, you are in go.
Planet to planet.
All right, you are in go.
And star to shining star from out of the night.
You've got it.
And into the light from the pyramids of Giza.
The
pyramids on Mars, from the dark side of the street to the dark side of the moon. Ancient antediluvian past to the furthest reaches of the far-flung future, from science fiction to science fact, from conspiracy theory to conspiracy reality, from hometown shenanigans to international intrigues, from the kingdom of Hermosa Beach in the California Bear Flag Republic, the war-torn streets of Tikrit. Your frequency is ascending. Revolution-radio.com, revolutiontalkradio.com, revolutionradio.rocks, revolutionradio.tv, and freedomslips.com. Or tickle pink, please just punch and busting their buttons. They're so proud to present Strange Universe, the program that is the pinnacle 16.4 billion years of evolution. Yes. The show's so nice, they named it thrice. The program that's the Scott Farkas of Internet Radio, the show Jesus loves, but everybody else thinks is kind of a jerk.
You've got it, got it.
A program that can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. Yes, indeed. The show that is unafraid of stupid people in large groups. A program that wouldn't be normal even if it could be. With your host, a man who has transcended his ego more than anyone on earth, and if you say any different, he'll punch you in the throat. The man who once won a dog show with a Bigfoot. The man who started out with nothing and still has most of it left. The man who... the man who, if he were to give you directions, you would never get lost and you'd arrive at least 5 minutes early. The man whose legend precedes him the way lightning precedes thunder. The man who has no friends, which is why he has to do his own introduction. The man who lives vicariously through himself. And the man who's been known to cure narcolepsy just by walking into a room. The man Babe Ruth was pointing at. The man predicted by the Mayan calendar. The man who... who had a staring contest with the sun, and the sun had a solar eclipse. It is I, the Sean. How are you? How's that for a big, long introduction for you? A couple of things, actually, of interest today. I don't know why I'm mentioning this. I just... feel like it, because it's one of those weird stories. Today is Sharon Stone's birthday. She's 57 years old, and she was born in the year of the dog, actually, in 1958. And here's an interesting, just tell you an interesting story. This is just one of those weird, random Hollywood stories that I was privy to, and I do mean privy as in privates, as they say, to this. But this is kind of a story that may sort of stun and amaze you. Okay, and just to show you how much it will stun and amaze you, I am going to bring Even Steven in for this to show his stunment and amazement. All right, Even Steven, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, now, when you think of Sharon Stone, what do you think of? Since the moon's in Scorpio today, what do you think of when you think of Sharon Stone?
My introduction to the genre of film known as pornography was the Sliver.
Was the what?
The movie Sliver.
Okay, and
voyeuristic, what would be the word? Inappropriate form of the surveillance state you could think of.
I think, wasn't that another movie that she did with Michael Douglas as well?
No, that was with one of the lesser Baldwin brothers. I think it was Stephen Baldwin.
Okay, but when you think of what, typical of you to just give me something completely obscure. When you think of Sharon Stone, what's the thing she's most famous for?
What was it? Fatal? No. Indecent Proposal?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And what's she most famous for in that movie?
For uncrossing her legs.
Yes, exactly. Now, this is what will stun and amaze you. In our quest, as some of you may know, for several years we've been I've been involved with two film companies. And one film company we were trying to take public and had constantly been thwarted by the complete dirtbags at the Washington office of the Security and Exchange Commission, who have not granted a private film company IPO, initial public offering, granted an IPO to a private film company in 20+7 years. They don't like it. So, but for whatever reason, we met with this woman who claimed that she had various contacts that had access to investment capital, venture capital, if you will. So, so here's what happened. We set an appointment up to meet at a fairly bougie restaurant, a little place called the Bottle Inn, actually in Hermosa Beach, and it's world famous. It's got it's 4-star cuisine. It's got a 5-star wine cellar. And it's a pretty fancy place. It's a place you go for Valentine's Day. It's very famous. It's on a little alcove. It used to be right across the street from where I maintained a domicile, because I live in my body, but I maintained a domicile there. And so she had gotten there about an hour before us. And this is just, as a sidelight, she got there about an hour before us, and she started ordering the wine. And when she left and we got the bill, and she left some 15 minutes before the bill came, wisely enough, I just remember that she stuck us with several $100 of really expensive wine. So as the conversation unfurled, we discovered that she was a body double, and that we had, in fact, now let me get this straight. I mean, no offense to my lovely female audience on this, but guys have kind of a thing which is called a butter face. And it's kind of a New York Jersey Guido sort of thing, where you see a gorgeous woman with a great body, with a really wonderful, well toned behind, if you will, and you think to yourself, "Whoa, she's really great." And then you see the front, and it looks a lot like, I don't know, like she ran through the ugly forest with every stick in the ugly forest actually hitting her in the face, and you go, "Wow, she's really hot, but her face." And there you go. So, not very attractive in the face, this woman. Not like she'd never been put together by a god that never seen a human before, but just not very attractive. But just this absolutely killer rockin' body. So she began to relate to us that we had, in fact, seen her naked in a whole bunch of very famous movies. Where, let me see, who was it? I mean, I can't even relate all the films, but all these movie stars that you thought you saw naked in films, from the back or from the neck down or what have you, was really her. So now she begins to tell us that she was in Fatal Instinct. And is it Fatal Instinct? Fatal Instinct, right? Fatal Instinct. Something Instinct. Basic Instinct. Basic Instinct. That was the name of the movie. Michael Douglas, Sharon Stone, that she was in Basic Instinct. And then, in fact, The moon's in Scorpio today, so we're going to talk about this. That was her. That, in fact, the most famous thing that Sharon Stone is known for is sitting in front of a bunch of policemen and uncrossing her legs and not having any panties on. And then you get a flash of her privates, if you will.
Ain't that beaver.
And that's the thing she's the most famous for. Now, she tells me that was not Sharon Stone, that she was used as the body double. They put her in the white dress. They put her in the whole thing. And that was her uncrossing her legs. In fact, we had in fact seen her vajayjay in this movie. Now, and I just said, no, come on, no. Because you remember the scene where she does it. And you remember the reaction of the police. And, of course, your attention is completely taken by the fact that she's, you know, uncrossing her legs and not wearing any underpants. And it's a big deal. So as fate and or luck would have it, a few weeks later, I'm bored. I'm sitting in my big daddy chair and I'm just skimming through the channels. And lo and behold, it was like one of those magical movie moments, those magical movie moments when you get in the car and like you turn on the radio and the radio is actually talking about the exact thing that you're talking about. It seems to only happen in movies. So as I'm clicking through the channels, there it is. There's the scene for Basic Instinct where she's talking to the police. And as she's talking to the police, she has her legs crossed and the whole deal. And you see this what we call a cowboy shot, sort of a knees all the way up top, shot of her. And lo and behold, since it's her birthday today, and since she played this off about, oh, well, I didn't know. And I didn't know that this director was going to do this. And she's told all these stories about this, which are complete lies, by the way. She stepped out of the scene and a body double stepped in. And guess what? As I'm watching the scene, just as her leg begins to uncross and you can go and check it for yourself, bam, it cuts. Mm. And there's a cut right there where you don't see her face and you see a body. And as her legs uncross and then cross the other way, when she then recrosses her legs, the shot goes back to a broader shot that actually shows her face. And I was like, son of a gun. holy cats. I can't believe that for all these years, you're faked into thinking that it was her and that it was one continuous shot. And lo and behold, it was not. So, and I can't even tell you the name of the woman. All I know is that she stuck us with a bar tab of like $250. And that she, to this day, probably is out there posing naked as various movie stars. What do you think of that, Steve?
I think you got more than you paid for when you watched that movie.
Yeah, indeed. So it was just so anyway, happy birthday, Sharon Stone. And you're a big liar. so there you go with your
big phony who lives. Yeah, big yeah, phony.
See, she's got a big phony vahoohoo. I don't know what I don't know, whatever. So that was just the moon's in Scorpio today, and we get a little crazy when the moon's in Scorpio. I just figured that was the perfect Scorpio story to have. Now, a couple of things. I was trying to get today. I was trying to get Charlotte Castle on. And Charlotte is the ginormous number one New York Times bestseller that wrote the books If the Buddha Dated and If the Buddha Married and a lot of other books on relationships and psychosexuality and all that stuff. And I'm a huge Charlotte Castle fan, and I'd read all of her books. I read If the Buddha Dated, If the Buddha Married. It was kind of interesting because she didn't have a real great working knowledge as far as I could see, because when I became a fan of her books, I had just lived in a Nepalese monastery for about eight plus months or so, and had some very interesting experiences there, especially when the monastery that I lived in was a sect called the Black Hats, called Karma Kagyu, and we focused a great deal on masculine energy. We focused a lot on what they call the Vajra, the Chiyad Vajra, which is the which is basically the male force, the lightning bolt, if you will, the first thought, and actually doing meditations that go back to the beginning of the universe and seeing the crack in time and space when the red electric of the masculine then interacts with the blue magnetic of the feminine, and the light comes forth from the feminine velvet void, if you will, and then creates the universe into existence. Which is, by the way, there's a mandala for that, which is actually a very sacred Tibetan mandala that's called the yantra, which is the supreme mandala. And what the mandala is actually used for is when you meditate on it, you can actually travel backwards and forwards in time, along your own time stream, if you will, having access to your past lives and previous existences. And as I discovered, you can actually travel forward along your time stream as well. If only I could do that within my lifetime so that I could actually go back and say something like, you know, don't sell your King World stock, buy Disney, take your own advice, buy Apple and Pixar, you know, that sort of stuff. And I would not be in the, well, no, you know what? As I said, I've been a millionaire like three times over in my life. And unfortunately, it's always been me investing in my friends that has destroyed me, my stupid friends. So, you know, who come up with all kinds of stuff, and I believe in them, and it's very difficult for me psychically or intuitively to, you know, think my friends are going to, well, be incompetent or steal my money, but it's, you know, things just kind of nosedive from there. So I was trying to get Charlotte on to talk about actually she was on the cruise with us. Now, because I was kind of sick and the cruise all sort of came at once, and we did this cruise to Mexico. I didn't know who she was. I just knew that she was on the program, and it wasn't until the last night of the cruise we were all having dinner together, and someone was passing her If the Buddha Dated book around, and I was like, oh, where did that come from? Who's reading that? And my friend Susan Shumsky says, well, that's Charlotte's book. And I'm like, oh my God, you're Charlotte Castle? It turns out she'd been on the cruise the entire time, and I didn't know who she was. I thought she was just a very sweet, pleasant little old lady. And anyway, I talked to her today, and I was trying to get her on the program today because I told her that I wanted her to see the movie 50 Shades of Grey, which is just the freaking stupidest movie. It's made $350 million. I mean, that's how desperate people are for some kind of connection. And you'll notice that Hollywood, there's no sex in the movies in Hollywood anymore. It just isn't. There's barely any breastises in sex anymore because you can't really get an R-rated film made. And by the way, the majority of R-rated films are all R-rated for language and violence, because you can get a PG rating if you cut off a woman's breasts, but apparently not if you play with them. So you know, that gets you an R right there. So it's a little interesting. So she went to go see 50 Shades of Grey, which, by the way, I haven't seen yet. Because everybody just told me that the movie was so ridiculously dumb. I suppose if I get a way to see it for free, or see it on the computer or something. But it is interesting that Hollywood has given up on the romantic comedy, which used to be the biggest thing in the 90s, really. But the people that destroyed romantic comedy were Katherine Hagel and Matthew McConaughey. I mean, they destroyed the romantic comedy forever. Matthew McConaughey was all right, and Katherine Hagel. Kate Hudson maybe also had something to do with it, but what used to be the staple, it was the bread and butter, really, of Hollywood, was romantic comedies. And now it's superhero movies, but superhero movies cost, you know, like gazillions of dollars to make. And it's getting to the point where Hollywood is I mean, they're going broke. And let me tell you some interesting developments. We're in the process of raising venture capital for another film company that's going to be all about distribution as well. And I'm working with people who have they've basically got a computer algorithm that's going to allow for transmissions and broadband speeds of something like 10 times faster than they are now, that will actually be able to transmit the new 4D and eventually what they call 5D. Although I thought 5D was actually travel through time. But it is interesting because we're talking about a distribution network, which is basically the pipeline, and then films that we're going to develop, which will be the oil, in essence, to put through the pipeline. So here's what's interesting about the war that's going on at the moment in the entertainment industry, that just recently – I've been talking about it for months now, but it's just recently hitting the front page of the LA Times. You know, it's beginning to actually even seep into Entertainment Weekly, which is usually just fluff and puff pieces about, love letters to Jimmy Kimmel and, you know, what Kim Kardashian's buttocks is doing. Because her buttocks basically detaches itself when she sleeps and goes out and has adventures and probably has sex with other people rather than Kanye.
Jesus.
So, yo, I can't say his name without going yee. So. So here's what's going on, which is sort of interesting. The number one, if you are making a blockbuster film, or if you're making a movie through any of the major studios, we're talking Paramount, Fox, Fox 20th Century, Universal, any of the big studios. The big studios, their overhead to make the movie, just the money that goes to the studio, is almost $48 million. And that's up almost $10 million from where it was before. So $48 million just to them for studio space and overhead and whatever else, that's where the budget starts. Now, you probably wonder why, when you have a big star in a movie, why you have a big star but the movie sucks. The reason is that because when you have a big star that's making $15 to $20 million and you only have a budget of, say, $25, only $5 million goes into the movie. The rest of it goes to the star. And that's another reason why you have these big stars now have their own production companies, and they're starting to do co-production deals in which they share in the profits for the film. Now, Sandra Bullock made the movie Gravity for almost no money. I mean, I think it was Sandra Bullock, who's one of probably the top five Q-rated stars. I would say in the 10. There's also something called a Q rating. And the Q rating, like one is the worst and 100 is the top. So a Q rating actually takes in, and it's a weird formula that nobody knows. It's one of these bizarre Las Vegas kind of formulas. It's like handicapping which college football team is going to win the national championship next year. And by the way, I think the top four are Vegas is betting on Ohio State's number one, Alabama's number two, Texas, TCU, actually, the TCU Horn Toads are number three, and USC actually is number four, right up there in the national championship hunt. So so the handicapping of a Q ratio is that you take into consideration the fame of the star, how well-known the star is, the box office receipts that are then averaged over the number of films that the star has made, as an example. And that would give you a Q rating of, like, let's say right now you've got who's hot right now? You still have Tom Cruise, who's way up there. But let's say Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, can't say Harrison Ford, but
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. as an example. They're up there, they're in the 90s. They would have a Q rating of anywhere between, as I said, 90 to 100. I have no idea who 100 is, who they consider the top star right now. But you've got a couple of women in there. You've got Sandra Bullock. Who else would you go? Yeah, Meryl Streep is up there as well. And then you go down, as you go down to the bottom, you know, or the middle, down to the 70s or the 60s or the 50s. So there's another formula in Hollywood that if you're putting a movie together, you can get like one A-list star that's up in the above 80 or so, or like three B-list stars that are down around, I don't know, 50 or 60 or so. And then you get television personalities that are down around the 30s or what have you. So, I mean, if I had a letter from Brad Pitt right now that said Brad Pitt wanted to star in one of my movies, and a letter of intent, I could walk into a bank today and the bank would give me $50 million to do a movie with Brad Pitt. They would just hand it to me sight unseen based on a verified letter from somebody like Brad Pitt, as an example, because they know that his movies make money. For example, quite some time ago, I had a script. I know Wesley Snipes. Tried to warn him about all the stuff that he was doing, and he was going the wrong way. And there was a script that was in front of Avi Lerner at Millennium Films, which was called Hellion, was the name of the script. And it was kind of a psychic policeman. And Avi Lerner offered the budget on the film was going to be, I think, about $16 million. And they were going to offer Wesley about $5 million of that because they knew that Wesley Snipes movies at that time – this is a long time ago – but at that time, Wesley Snipes movies would make anywhere between $40 and about $60 million. So that's a pretty good deal to be able to get a $15 to $16 million film, get Wesley $5 million up front, and then make the movie as an example of it. Now, the reason I'm talking about this now is because there's going to be a massive change in entertainment that's coming – it's here, really, but it's coming in the next 3 years or so, because here's what they've discovered. Number one, you've got Netflix with 55 million subscribers out there that's just rolling in money. I mean, they're just rolling in money. They don't know what to do with all their money. And the gauntlet has been thrown down because Netflix, with all this cash, wanted to get into major feature films. Well, the Theater Association has now come out and said, no, we will not allow to be shown in any of our theaters, you know, any of the big theaters, we will not allow any movie produced by Netflix to be in our theaters, because they don't want Netflix, which, by the way, has won a bunch of Emmys for television and several Golden Globes, but we do not want Netflix to have access to the Academy Awards. Like, the Academy Awards matter at all. And again, what has the Motion Picture Academy done? And let me tell you how horrible the Motion Picture Academy is. The reason they suck, and the reason they themselves, outside of their stupid award show, the reason they are terrible is because the Academy Awards used to be held in April, and there was a reason for that. They were held anywhere between around Easter, but anywhere between about April 10th and about April 15th or so. If you remember in the late 90s when Titanic, I think 98 was when Titanic came out. It was, geez, a long time ago. When Titanic came out, James Cameron won the Academy Award for Best Picture, and I think it won like 12 Academy Awards or something. But he won those Academy Awards on the day, it was like April 14th, that the Titanic actually sank, which was like the anniversary of it or something. And there was a reason for that. And the reason for that is because you would get Academy Award winning films that deserve to be seen that then aren't seen usually by the general public. And the slowest months for movies used to be, and still is really, January, February, March. So you release your Academy-worthy films in late December, and then you had 4 months for people to build a buzz around a movie, go to the films, go and see the films, get the Academy people to go see them. They used to give us, because I belong to the Writers Guild of America, and I'm a member of the Screen Actors Guild and the American Federation of Radio and Television Artists, AFTRA and SAG and all that. And they used to give us screeners where we could actually, see the movies and then give us stuff some vote. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Then we've got a bunch of really interesting conversations about taxes, which you're probably worrying about your taxes right now. And people are asking me questions about taxes and all that, and I'll answer those questions and get to your mail. Strange Universe Radio. Yes, we're the best. Yes, we're the number one show. Yes, we rock. Amazing. Those who get too big for their pants will be exposed to the end.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Imagine. Just imagine.
Imagine a world
where every child and adult will have the opportunity to achieve their dreams.
I believe my inspiration is the answer.
My inspiration is the greatest light.
The greatest energy.
It was born when the universe was sparked into life.
It's within everything.
My inspiration transforms pain into happiness.
And failure into success.
My inspiration inspires lives.
It inspires lives.
It inspires human lives.
My inspiration is always shining like the sun.
But it doesn't mean that it's alive.
For centuries, my inspiration was in prison.
In prison.
In prison.
It doesn't belong there.
Its home is to be known to all people.
My inspiration is in trouble.
We are fighting for its life right now.
Right this moment.
This moment.
Millions all over the world want to go beyond their limitations.
Liberate their dreams and reach success.
The failure of us all to be someone
is the biggest disease
of all time.
Each day our brothers and sisters die.
Please help us to birth this inspiration to life.
And that will stop this disease.
Help us get the word out of our inspiration.
Help us.
Help us.
It's our shared belief for a better future beyond the horizon.
Let's write the future.
Heroism is here.
Stand up and grasp it.
Stand up.
Stand up and grasp it.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
The dreams of all people.
This is Nighthawk from Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, and now is your time to stand up and make a difference or
fade away.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
On the go? Still want to listen? Don't have one of those fancy phones with too many buttons? Don't know what an app is? Or you don't even care? Well, we got you here at Revolution Radio. Now you can dial in 24/7 to listen to our shows. We have a number for Studio A and Studio B, and best of all, it's free. Don't forget, your carrier charges for your cell phone provider may apply, though, so check with your cell provider to make sure. So ready? Here you go. Get a pen. Here's the number. Studio A is 712-432-6958, and Studio B is 716-748-0112. Thank you very much for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station in the world.
Epic story spanning 40 years in the life of Dr. Ted Humphrey and his involvement with
time travel, Area 51,
adult missiles,
the Montauk Project,
the Shadow Government,
and Dr. Humphrey's meteoric rise to become head of an all-powerful global organization engaged in a desperate race against time to save our world. At 17, Ted's father, a brilliant government scientist, disappears, and Ted makes it his life's mission to discover his father's fate. This leads to him being drafted into beyond top secret projects, making the most valuable machine ever built, a device that can move through space and time. As time tech is developed, Ted is taken inside an elite clandestine group of men dedicated to hiding a deadly truth that forces from beyond the stars could lead to Earth's destruction. Ted gets guidance from people further down and outside the time stream, never knowing who he can trust, while still seeking to solve his father's disappearance. Sands of Time is truly remarkable, a rare look behind the curtain of the black world of super technology, and shows us once again that all we have come to accept as reality is wrong.
And now, for the very first time, Sands of Time, Volume 1, is now available in paperback for only $25. Read the book that Amazon ranked 5 stars. Also, in ebook and dynamic voice spoken word audio, all at Amazon or StrangeUniverseRadio.com.
Read this book and never be the same.
This is JP from Journeys with JP. You're listening to Revolution Radio. And now back to Sean David Morton with Strange Universe.
Hi, this is Ron Jeremy. You're listening to Porno Sonic.
Welcome back to Strange Universe Radio. We're just fooling around. Moon's in Scorpio, so we're doing the sexy, sexy dance, baby. That's right. They're doing sexy, sexy dance. Yeah, for you. Ha ha. Rod Stewart being very sexy like me. So there we go. All right, let me wrap up my diatribe on the film industry. So here's what's changing and what's interesting and the various gauntlets that are being thrown down. The major networks have pretty much figured out, number one, movies are getting far too expensive. And now everybody is completely freaking out because they don't know how long the fanboy superhero genre is going to last, especially with the fact that Sony did not want to make another Spider-Man, primarily because they, once again, they moved away from the people that knew how to make Spider-Man, like Sam Raimi, cast an English guy as Spider-Man who's like, oh, I totally understand the character of Peter Parker, and he didn't. Peter Parker, who's a science nerd, who's studies a lot, not some stupid fanboy who rides a skateboard, who has the hottest girl in school, who wears a hoodie, you know, who's like all super cool as Peter Parker, you know, and then is super cool as Spider-Man, you know, and those two Andrew Garfield movies, just, they sucked. They were just terrible. Really? You got to have the Green Goblin again? So, and now Sony has made a deal with Marvel and Disney to basically sell them Spider-Man and co-produce a film with Spider-Man. The bottom line of all this, though, is that these superhero movies, for example, the next James Bond movie, which is called Spectre, is going to cost $300 million. And I got to the point where the main studio that was actually financing it through MGM was saying, could you tone it down a bit? Do we need 7 trains? Can we do 5? And the Broccolis and the James Bond people said, no. And then he said, well, can we shoot maybe something in a studio? Can we save a little money on this? Maybe a few million dollars? No. So it's going to be $300 million. And then this is probably going to be the last movie for Daniel Craig. I mean, he's only done 3 Bond films because in the middle of that, MGM was going broke and the Bond franchise, it looked as though, even though he's beaten, you know, Goldfinger and Spectre and Ernst Stavro Blofeld over and over and over again, it looked like the idiots in MGM were going to destroy James Bond once and for all. So with these movies costing $300 million plus, with movie ticket sales plummeting, with, as I said, it's $48 million to actually start a film at a major studio. That's just their upfront money. That's the money that goes to them as their overhead, if you will. So, and here is what actually is actually frightening the networks at the moment. What's frightening them is they've now discovered that with broadcast television, within 3 years, maybe, might be a little bit longer than that, but within about 3 years or so, the price of producing their shows is going to outstrip their profits. And that's what they're now figuring out. And CBS, as an example, and this is Les Moonves, you've heard of all the fights with CBS. CBS has had these huge fights with DirecTV. They had a huge fight with Time Warner Cable. Because CBS, which used to be the complete total whorehouse network like 10 years ago, suddenly somebody at CBS said, well, let's pitch a few shows to an older demographic. It's not just all teenagers out there or tweeners. Let's pitch a few shows to older demographics with a few older actors in them. And lo and behold, guess what? People started watching their programs. They found that there was an audience outside the 18 to 35 demographic of people that are watching all the, I mean, you know, you've got CSI and then they just move the letters around. You've got CSI and ICS and NCIS and, you know, CSI Boise. I want to see CSI Salt Lake City. That's what I want to see. You know, them figuring
out. I always thought it was amusing. Adult Swim, the Cartoon Network's, you know, adult, like, animated.
Yes, I know Adult Swim. Yes,
they,
yes.
That one live action parody of all those shows, which literally its name was NTSFD AID SUV or something like that. And every letter did actually stand for something. And it was a huge, yeah, like cluster bomb of stuff. And they were making fun of all of those shows,
right,
in one big thing. And I think they had Chris Elliott was a main character. And Chris Elliott was a different one.
My point being is that what's happening is now is that the costs of what they're doing is going to outstrip their advertising. And here's another gauntlet that's been thrown down. They're now finding it's something like 55% of people are actually watching programs on television usually a week later. Because what's happening is that people work. Obviously, there's a lot of shows on TV. They DVR or TiVo or whatever. They record the shows throughout the week, and then they kind of binge watch them on the weekends. Well, now the big network, specifically CBS, and CBS is now threatened. First off, you have CBS Online, which now costs you like $5.99 a month, which now allows you to access certain shows anytime you want to access them. So that's where it's going there. The next step is CBS is actually threatened to stop broadcasting publicly and actually become a show that is only on cable or DirecTV. The only thing that's stopping them is because CBS has been so snotty and so horrible to Time Warner and has been in these fights with them, that if they stopped publicly broadcasting, you know, over the airways where you can pick it up with a you can actually pick all this TV up for free with a high definition antenna. But now they're finding that what they want to do, which is go only pay, now they're running into Time Warner and DirecTV getting a little revenge from, for example, CBS. If you remember, CBS was off the air off both of those mediums, I think, for about a month or so, about 2 or 3 years ago. So now what's happening is that streaming is now becoming a bigger deal. Here's the interesting part where it relates to what we're doing here. Strange Universe Radio right now is there, and I've explained this before, but there are 10,000 radio stations on the internet. There's 10,000 stations that you can pick up with your computer, iPod or iPhone or Android or Razer, you know, whatever it is you're using. 10,000 stations. The mainstream media, and I've said this before, and these are just general numbers, but I think MSNBC, which stands for mostly saying nothing but crap, they're somewhere around 3,800 or so. Their online presence is about 3,800. Then you have ABC News online as well, and they're at about 2,800 approximately. Fox News is at about anywhere between 1,500 and 1,700 or so. This show's 27. 27 out of 10,000. And this program is the only internet radio program that actually breaks TalkStream Live, and which is the rating system. TalkStream Live is Michael Levine, Dennis Miller, Jerry Doyle, Sean Hannity, usually in the top five, and Sean David Morton with Strange Universe Radio. We're in the top five on TalkStream Live virtually every week, and we've been number one on a number of occasions on that. That's impossible. It's impossible with an internet program. And here's my other challenge. We go out there to people who are, you know, sponsors, you know, who will help us with what we're doing with the program, and they'll go, well, it's on the internet. It's not terrestrial. And a terrestrial radio station is like Clear Channel. They're all terrestrial. Terrestrial station is and a non-terrestrial or extraterrestrial stations would be XM Sirius, would be satellite radio, would be anything on the internet. We're the number one non-terrestrial station talk show. And as I said, we rank 17th out of something like 10,000. Number one is, like I said, it's always Mariachi's Today. Never discount the power of mariachi music. Number two is like Kiss FM Romania. I have no idea. They're throwing just a nonstop disco apparently in Romania, probably led by my old buddy Peter Petros. Alex Jones is up there, but Alex Jones pulls a lot of tricks. As far as I understand it, in my opinion, it seems as though that if you tune in or if you click on a website or something and Alex Jones is sponsoring, that somehow counts as a listener. And there's also another little trick out there that they call robo-clickers, which, you know, you actually pay for a service that, I don't know, has a guy or machine or something that basically just goes dagga 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 and, you know, gets your show up there, gets you a lot of hits or a bunch of Facebook friends. Because I just can't imagine Alex Jones having that many friends. So, you know, so there it is. By honestly doing a really good show and by trying to inform you every day, we're the number one non-terrestrial talk show. Not of this earth, I guess, because they're not terrestrial, I guess we're extraterrestrial or something. But when you go to advertisers and you try to say, look, we're reaching so many people. Advertisers or sponsors we have somebody who sponsors this program. I just found this out, but we do have somebody who sponsors us so that we can have a music license, so that you can listen to music, so that we can actually play the funny stuff that we play or songs that relate to the topics or whatever else. You'll notice that there's no other hosts really get to play music. Because we actually have somebody who pays for as our sponsor, as one of our angels out there. I don't know who it is. I know it's a lady, but they pay $500 plus a month, I think, just to allow us to pay some ASCAP fees to the music guys to allow us to be able to, you know, fool around and do ins and outs with music to make it sound like an actual radio show instead of just coming back. Now, we actually have enough stuff of just crazy stuff that I've created and you know, things that I've thrown together that we could probably do it that way and probably monetize the show. But I've been told not really to worry about it. Or we do only like 30 seconds or 40 seconds, I think, you know, you can play this. So here's where it's going. Right now, all the major networks have now realized that they're freaking out because now they're saying that their content is going to cost more than the money that they're bringing in. And already they've thrown the gauntlet down as well to various television advertisers. And they said, look, we're going to force you to pay advertising rates for people that are watching these programs on DVRs anywhere from a week to 2 weeks out now, which means we're going to charge you the same rates for people not watching live, which is how it used to be with the Nielsen ratings and all that, because Nielsen's now kind of gone away, because now they can actually get direct numbers off DVRs, and they're going to say, we're make you pay up to 2 weeks later in far as advertising installments for people that are watching on DVRs. Of course, the advertisers argue that people that are watching stuff on DVRs don't watch the commercials. I mean, I've got a button on my box that you click it, and it jumps ahead 30 seconds, which is perfect for watching football because there's 35 seconds in between each play on football. So I can watch an entire football game in 15 minutes just by clicking through. It drives my wife crazy, but I'm like, I don't need to know what this guy did yesterday. I just want to see what he does on the field. And I can watch a bunch of film and, you know, watch a bunch of games. As I said, there's only 9 minutes of action in an entire 3-plus-hour football game. So everything is going to change. Everything is going to go to streaming. Everything is going to go to wireless. Everything is going to go this way, where the model of this was a movie that came out of Korea called Snowpiercer that just did all kinds of money, did not open in the theater, and you could get it on VOD, basically video on demand. Because what's going to happen when the movie theaters just kind of go away? Because the film experience, my TV. I mean, I actually, you know, when I actually had some money, I bought a decent television, and you know, my TV and sitting in my, and we just got our chairs yesterday. We just, oh my goodness, this was such a huge thing. It was like having children. My wife and I have saved and scrimped and saved for so long just to buy a new pair of chairs. We had these old leather chairs. Mine was bent and it used to give me a backache, and her it would mess up the knees and all that. So we just got our chairs in yesterday. These gorgeous Macy's leather chairs that are mostly leather, and they weren't even that expensive. I think with delivery is like $1,000. Yes, interrupting Dolphin.
Yeah, and the other thing to keep in mind, if you go and you look at like, you go to like a Best Buy and you go to like their Lenovo section, whatever the heck that section is for like the super fancy televisions, you can get a concave 3D like 2000 something P like a high definition television that you can put in with your home entertainment, for a couple thousand bucks that some of these people are shelling out, and then those people have friends, you can go and you can put it all up in there, and then if they're really tech savvy, they can acquire the movie roughly around the time it's out in theaters, and you can have the whole damn experience in the living room for whatever price that it actually costs.
And by the way, the theater owners could have spent the money. The United States and the theater owners could have spent the money to stop all that piracy, to completely stop it. They had the ability at the time to be able to actually do the encryption software that would have stopped that. And you know what? They didn't care. They didn't spend the money. They are not upgrading their experience. It took George Lucas back 30-plus years ago when Star Wars came out to blackmail the movie owners, the movie theater owners, into getting THX sound systems, very much like Disney tried to do as well when he was doing Fantasia and he wanted to tour Fantasia with a full orchestra, but because he wanted the good sound. And it took George Lucas to blackmail them to say, well, you're not going to get to play Star Wars in your theaters unless you upgrade the sound system. Well, the theater owners don't care. They're not upgrading their system. They're not putting in digital screens. They're not putting in IMAX, because that's the only reason most people go to see stuff. You go to see stuff for the experience of seeing a screen that's five stories high. I mean, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy like three times in IMAX just for the experience of seeing it, you know, on a big screen. So the big event movies aren't going to go away, but all these other movies like, I don't know, Imitation Game and the Stephen Hawking story and all that. Really, do I really need to see that? Do I really need to pay $20+ plus a drink plus? It's $30 a person to go in there, go into the movie theaters, do all this. So I'm just telling you that it's very interesting that the company that I'm involved with now and the things that we're doing with venture capital I'm working with a gentleman that used to be a vice president of Apple, and I'm hoping that as this goes along that I'm going to be – well, I've already been named the vice president in charge of development, which is great because I just develop my own scripts. I'm like, well, I bet Sean Morton's a good writer. We're going to do this movie now. So that's kind of the good thing, and they are talking about doing – Sands of Time and another script that I wrote called Message from the Pleiades, which is the true story of the Billy Meyer UFO case that I've had. I've had this script laying around for about 15 years or so. All right, so there you go. That's that. Now, somewhere here, I think I have a message. I have a personal message from the President of the United States. Do we want to play that, Steve? I think it's a... My fellow Americans, I come to you with a message from the White House. And I just want to tell you that I am not incompetent. I am destroying America more quickly than anyone thought possible. I am not in over my head. I am advancing totalitarianism right under your noses. I am not stupid.
Go out and see what you can find.
Stupid are those who fail to see the danger that I bring to this country.
Take a rap or a meal.
I am not failing. I'm succeeding at every goal that I have set.
You were down or a turn of 25.
I am embracing your enemies.
When the sun goes,
I am rejecting your friends.
Really buy.
I am acting lawlessly and unconstitutionally. I'm ignoring your constitution. I'm disobeying your laws.
We do as we please. When the
your media is aiding and abetting me at every turn. Your Congress is not stopping me. Those sworn to defend your constitution are not removing me from office. I and my friends, and my husband, I mean my wife, my orphans, I mean children that I found somewhere in Morocco. I am fundamentally transforming the United States of America. Your constitution, liberty, freedom, wealth, future, and children are no longer at risk. In fact, the risk is past. You suckers have already lost. Thank you. This has been a message from the President of the United States of America. All right, there you go. Thank you, Barack Obama. What? How great that he would actually come onto the show and record that. Thank you so much. Okay, I don't know if you guys feel like talking about it. I know some people are doing taxes and tax stuff and all that, and I don't know. Let's talk. I'm going to do a couple of things because I've had a couple of people ask me a few questions, and there's some interesting things out there. I may not go through all the questions that I've got, but I have all of the court cases and Supreme Court cases and all that to back this up. But I just thought you might like some interesting information on our buddies at Internal Revenue and the Internal Revenue Service. So here's some questions that people have asked me throughout the last couple of weeks or so. Just people have written me and I just wanted to answer a few of these. We don't have any. I don't know if we should play like a bed to this or not, but I guess we would play the bed to it. We play like, you know, money, 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 money by the OJs, which is also now the H&R Block commercial, getting your billions back. So here's a couple of things. I found this interesting. We may just do this for about 5 minutes or so and then go on to something else. Dear Sean, is the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, an organization within the Department of the U.S. Treasury? The answer to that is no. The IRS is not an organization within the United States Department of the Treasury. The U.S. Department of the Treasury was, in fact, organized by statutes that are now codified in Title 31 of the United States Code, abbreviated as 31 U.S.C. And the only mention of the IRS anywhere in 31 U.S.C., Sections 301 and 310, is an authorization for the president to appoint an assistant general counsel in the U.S. Department of the Treasury to be the chief counsel for the IRS. That might be a little bit too obnoxious. I don't know if we. Okay, just keep it low in the background, right?
The best things in life are free.
At footnote 23 in the case of Chrysler Corp. v. Brown, the U.S. Supreme Court admitted that no organic act for the IRS could be found after they searched for such an act all the way back to the Civil War, which ended in the year 1865. The guarantee clause in the U.S. Constitution guarantees the rule of law to all Americans, and we're supposed to be governed by law, not arbitrary bureaucrats. Since there was no organic act creating it, IRS is not a lawful organization. Actually, Steve, why don't you see if you can find it's Money by the OJs, I think it is. OJs?
Working on it.
Okay, thanks. I got it here somewhere, I think. Hold on. Let me pull it up. It's out there somewhere. Hold on. It's otherwise, I should probably do a really, there's all kinds of money songs in here. That's, okay, hold on. OJs, there we go. And there it is. Oh, it's called For the Love of Money. There it is. There we go. All right, we're going away anyway. All right, we got a break coming up. We'll do a few more of these questions. If not an organization within the U.S. Department of the Treasury, then what exactly is the IRS? We're gonna answer that question, because the IRS appears to be a collection agency working for foreign banks and operating out of Puerto Rico. So we'll answer two questions, so you can play this for all your friends come tax day, where you will voluntarily pay all your taxes. And this is Sean David, and I reiterate that I have made the above terminations in this declaration under no direct coercion. I was under influence of my own free will. Here's where I won't get the time.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Enjoy your
extra big ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another
extra big ass fries?
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
No, no.
I'm sorry you're
having
trouble.
Come on.
I'm
My kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So, if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life, it goes in eternity.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
I'm Joshua P. Warren. Imagine a box that can make your wishes come true. Does it sound unbelievable? Do you know, over the years, books have been burned and people have gone to prison for discussing this? Why? Because millions of people around the world say it works. I'm talking about the Wishing Machine Radionics Box. These are extremely rare, and for a limited time, you can get one. Go right now to StrangeUniverseRadio.com and click the link to watch a free video about the Wishing Machine and what it can do for your health, relationships, finances, and more. The Wishing Machine can help you with most any problem. Again, you can't find these every day. So go right now to StrangeUniverseRadio.com and watch the free video to learn how the Wishing Machine can help you. You'll see why I and countless people around the world use one every day.
Take a look around, kid. What do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country is founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this
justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
On the go? Still want to listen? Don't have one of those fancy phones with too many buttons. Don't know what an app is? Or you don't even care? Well, we got you here at Revolution Radio. Now you can dial in 24/7 to listen to our shows. We have a number for Studio A and Studio B, and best of all, it's free. Don't forget, your carrier charges for your cell phone provider may apply, though, so check with your cell provider to make sure. So ready? Here you go. Get a pen. Here's the number. Studio A is 712-432-6958, and Studio B is 716-748-0112. Thank you very much for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station in the world.
This is Lorian Fenton from the Fenton Perspective. You're listening to Revolution Radio. And now we take you back to Strange Universe with your host, Sean David Morton.
Back to Strange Universe Radio. It's the Sean. How you doing? That's with an S-E-A-N. And I would like to state again for the record that I am a naked inhabitant at peace with the United States of America, and all of its alternative nom de guerre. I am not a rebel, an insurrectionist, an enemy of the state, a terrorist, or a pirate. I am the beneficiary of the public trust and have properly corrected the public record of my status and revoked all contracts to the contrary. I am here to help and benefit all mankind and am a vessel of the ever-living God, bivouacked here upon this planet until I am called home to my permanent home in heaven. All of my actions are designed to reflect this deeply held personal religious belief. It is my mission on earth to assist the widows and orphans and all those who have been wounded in this everlasting war. I am a state citizen of the California Republic under the Organic Constitution of 1847 and of the state of California as a man born upon the land of this state. I am a national of the United States of America. I have filed sworn affidavits to this effect to change my status, as I am not party as a Caucasian white male to the 14th Amendment, nor was it ever adopted for me or for my benefit. Also, I'm not a tax protester or any kind of protester. I'm in complete agreement with the tax system of the United States and the income tax as it stands when it is legally applied to those that are a legal party to it and to all those that volunteer and sign the consent form, as it's voluntary 1040 right at the top. So I just want to state that. So this is about you volunteering for stuff. And question, Sean, if not an organization, the IRS, an organization within the U.S. Department of the Treasury, then what exactly is the IRS? Well, I've sent for my master file with the IRS, and my master file is stamped every other page. It says International Monetary Fund, IMF, IMF, IMF. Therefore, the IRS appears to be a collection agency working for foreign banks and operating out of Puerto Rico under the color of the Federal Alcohol Administration, also known as the FAA. But the FAA was promptly declared unconstitutional inside the 50 states by the U.S. Supreme Court in the case of U.S. versus Constantine, because prohibition had already been repealed. There was an amendment to the Constitution to make it legal again. So in 1998, the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit identified a second Secretary of the Treasury as a man by the name of Manuel Diaz Saldana. Published decision in Used Tire International Inc. versus Manuel Diaz Saldana, court docket number 972348, September 11th of 1998. Both definitions mention Puerto Rico. And when all the evidence is examined objectively, IRS appears to be a money laundry, extortion racket, and conspiracy to engage in a pattern of racketeering activity in violation of 18 U.S.C. 1951 and 1967, 61, et sec., also known as RICO, the Racketeering and Corrupt Organizations Act. So think of Puerto Rico, Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act. In other words, it is an organized crime syndicate operating under false and fraudulent pretenses if you look at the Sherman Act and what's called the Lanham Act. Question. By what legal authority, if any, has the IRS established offices inside the 50 states of the Union? Well, after a whole lot of research, several investigators have concluded that there is no known act of Congress nor any executive order giving IRS lawful jurisdiction to operate within any of the 50 states of the Union. Their presence within the 50 states appears to stem from certain agreements on coordination of tax administration, which is known as ACTA, in which officials of those states have consummated with the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. A template for the ACTA agreements can be found at the IRS Internet website and in the Supreme Law Library on the Internet. However, those ACTA agreements are demonstrably fraudulent, for example, by expressly defining IRS as a lawful bureau within the U.S. Department of the Treasury. Moreover, those ACTA agreements also appear to violate state laws requiring competitive bidding before such a service contract can be awarded by a state government to any subcontractor. So there's no evidence to indicate that ACTA agreements were reached after a competitive bidding process at all. On the contrary, the IRS is adamant about maintaining a complete monopoly of its criminal syndicate. Can the IRS legally show Department of the Treasury on their outgoing mail? No. It is obvious that such deceptive nomenclature is intended to convey the false impression that the IRS is a lawful bureau or department within the U.S. Department of Treasury. Federal laws prohibit the use of United States mail for fraudulent purposes. Every piece of U.S. mail sent from IRS with Department of the Treasury in the return address is one count of mail fraud under 31 U.S.C. 333. And again, they confuse you because Internal Revenue Service is a private collection agency that comes under, I think, Title 16 and does come under the Rosenthal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. But Internal Revenue is Title 26. Question, does the U.S. Department of Treasury or Justice, I'm sorry, does the U.S. Department of Justice have power of attorney to represent the IRS in federal court? No. Although the U.S. Department of Justice, the DOJ, does have power of attorney to represent federal agencies before federal courts, the IRS is not an agency, as that term is legally defined in the Freedom of Information Act or in the Administrative Procedures Act. The governments of all federal territories are expressly excluded from the definition of federal agency by an act of Congress. That's 5 U.S.C. 551. And since IRS is domiciled in Puerto Rico, or RICO, Racketeering Influence Corruption Organizations Act, it's thereby excluded from the definition of federal agencies, which can be represented by the DOJ. So the IRS chief counsel, appointed by the president under authority of 31 U.S.C. 301, can appear or appoint a delegate to appear in federal court on behalf of IRS and IRS employees. Again, you can refer to question one, but as far as powers of attorney are concerned, the chain of command begins with Congress and flows to the president and then to the IRS chief counsel and not to the U.S. Department of Justice. Question, were the so-called 14th and 16th Amendments properly ratified? Well, no. Yeah, you're never gonna win it in court, but neither was properly ratified. Actually, in the case of the People versus Boxer, which was from 1992, U.S. Senator Barbara Boxer fell totally silent in the face of an application to the California Supreme Court by the people of California for an order compelling Senator Boxer to witness the material evidence against the so-called 16th Amendment. And that so-called amendment allegedly authorized federal income taxation, even though it contains no provision expressly repealing two constitutional clauses mandating that direct taxes must be apportioned. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and the U.S. Supreme Court have both ruled that repeals by implication are not favored. The material evidence in question was summarized in affidavits that were properly executed and filed in that case. Boxer fell totally silent, thus rendering those affidavits the truth of the case. So the so-called 16th Amendment has now been correctly identified as a major fraud upon the American people and the United States. A major fraud against the United States is a serious federal offense. Similarly, the so-called 14th Amendment was also never properly ratified either, because in the case of Dyett v. Turner, that's from 1968, the Utah Supreme Court recited numerous historical facts proving beyond any shadow of a doubt that the so-called 14th Amendment was likewise a major fraud upon the American people. And those facts, in many cases, were acts of the several state legislatures voting for or against that proposal to amend the U.S. Constitution. The Supreme Law Library has a collection of references detailing this major fraud. So the U.S. Constitution requires that constitutional amendments be ratified by three-fourths of the several states. As such, acts are governed by the full faith and credit clauses of the Constitution. But judging by the sheer amount of litigation its various sections have generated, particularly Section 1, the so-called 14th Amendment is one of the worst pieces of legislation ever written in American history. The phrase subject to the jurisdiction of the United States is properly understood to mean subject to the municipal jurisdiction of Congress. And they have municipal jurisdiction only over Washington, D.C. And for this one reason alone, the congressional resolution proposing the so-called 14th Amendment is provably vague and therefore unconstitutional. And by the way, the 14th Amendment was not written for you. The 14th Amendment specifically, actually, even if you look at the 16th Amendment, the 14th Amendment actually creates a second class of citizen, which is known as a federal citizen. And you I read this the other day, the Declaration of the Affidavit of Citizenship, which is a totally different deal. You have to have one for Caucasian whites, because the Constitution was actually written for Caucasian white males, not for African Americans, not for women. And actually, women, African Americans, Indians, everybody else, you couldn't even vote if you didn't actually own property. That's the biggest thing about it. And why property? Because in essence, if you vote in laws only affect people that actually have property. So you actually can state that you're not restricted by the 14th Amendment. You receive no protection or benefit from the 14th Amendment. You have no reciprocal obligation to the 14th Amendment, allegiance or sovereignty, and owe no obedience to anyone under the 14th Amendment. And that's from the United States Supreme Court case of the United States versus Wong Kim Ark in 1898. But you have to declare your status as a free citizen of the state and the republic of your birth, and that you derive benefits as a citizen, capital C, of these United Small Capital S States of America, as contemplated in the original constitutional contract. So by stating that you're not a citizen of the United States in any of its derivations or nom de guerre, which are names of war, as contemplated by the 14th Amendment, and do not reside in any state or republic of the Union with the intention of receiving from the federal government or any other party a protection against the legislative power of that state pursuant to the authority of the 14th Amendment, and you are not a non-resident to the residency, an alien to the citizenship of the 14th Amendment, therefore, the tax imposed in 26 U.S.C. pursuant to 26 CFR on federal citizens and residents He goes, remember, they make you a U.S. citizen, but a resident of the state. The definition of a resident is really nothing more than a slave. But as it's contemplated by the 14th Amendment, it is not applicable to Internal Revenue law to me or you if you declare your status, as you're neither a citizen or a resident. So notwithstanding that fact, I may have in the past filed United States voluntary 1040 individual income tax returns, but such filings were done under mistake by me, not knowing that such filings were and are mandated only on citizens and residents of the United States, capital letters, as contemplated by the 14th Amendment. So not being a resident in any of its legal definitions of any state under the 14th Amendment, you can disavow any contract, form, agreement, application, certificate, license, permit, or other document that I or any other person may have signed expressly or by acquiescence that would grant me any privileges and thereby ascribe to me rights and duties under a substantive system of law other than that of the Constitutional Contract of 1787. For these united small u, capital S, states of America and of the constitutions of the several states of the Union, exclusive of the 14th Amendment. Does that make any sense? Or am I just completely – I'm probably just babbling away here about this stuff, but I think it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else does.
I'm following it.
Okay. So question, where are the statutes that create a specific liability for federal income tax? Well, Section 1 of the Internal Revenue Code, the IRC, contains no provisions creating a specific liability for taxes imposed by Subtitle A. But aside from the statutes which apply only to federal government employees pursuant to the Public Salary Tax Act, the only other statutes that create a specific liability for federal income taxes are those itemized in the definition of withholding agent. So, for example, there's an IRC section which has a separate liability statute for employment taxes imposed by Subtitle C, which is found in the IR code. Theoretically, what they really make you do is because you sign a W-2 or a W-4, that really makes you a federal employee. So you're a slave of the federal government, and then they basically loan their slaves out to other farms for you to pick cotton somewhere else, and then they get a cut. That's why you're called a franchisee. But after a worker authorizes a payroll officer to withhold taxes by completing a W-4, the payroll officer then becomes a withholding agent who is legally and specifically liable for payment of all taxes withheld from that worker's paycheck, which, by the way, is a violation of the 13th Amendment. Because the 13th Amendment is involuntary servitude, and they've turned all of you into tax collectors for them. Even sales tax, really, you have a business license and all that, but who's to say that the business owner has to then collect taxes for the state by charging you sales tax? Isn't that working for the state? Involuntary servitude, don't we spend billions of dollars a year and billions of man hours actually filling out these forms to self-assess ourselves? So until such time as those taxes are paid in full into the Treasury of the United States, the withholding agent is the only party who's legally liable for those taxes, not the worker. It's basically your boss that's liable for the taxes. Because if the worker opts instead to complete a withholding exemption certificate, which is also consistent with the IRC Section 3402, the payroll officer is not thereby authorized to withhold any federal income taxes. So in this letter situation, there's absolutely no liability for the worker or for the payroll officer. In other words, there's no liability, period, specifically because there's no withholding agent. Question, can a federal regulation create a specific liability when no specific liability is created by the corresponding statute? Well, no. The U.S. Constitution vests all legislative power in the Congress of the United States. The executive branch of the federal government has no legislative power whatsoever. So this means that agencies of the executive branch and also the federal courts and the judicial branch are prohibited from making law. Can't really tell that to the Supreme Court these days because they just think, oh, whatever we say goes. But if an act of Congress fails to create a specific liability for any tax imposed by that act, then there's no liability for that tax. And executive agencies have no authority to cure any such omission by using regulations to create a liability. Here's right out of the book. An administrative agency may not create a criminal offense or any liability not sanctioned by the lawmaking authority, especially a liability for a tax or inspection fee. And that's Commissioner of Internal Revenue versus Acker. But however, this cite from American jurisprudence has been removed from the 1994 edition of that legal encyclopedia. So it's been thrown down the 1984 memory hole. Question, the federal regulations create an income tax liability for what specific classes of people? Now, this gets really interesting because in all these regulations, they have very specific definitions for income. And income is money that makes money. If you have a property that makes money, if you have stocks that make money, interest, for example, is taxable because it's money and making money. When you go out and trade your blood, sweat, and tears for 40 hours a week for either Federal Reserve notes or a chicken or a pig or a bag of grain, that's an exchange of services. It's not technically income. But once again, there's regulations, 26 CFR, attempted to create a specific liability for all, remember, small c, citizens of the United States. That's under the 14th Amendment, kids. Citizens of the United States was originally only meant for recently freed or emancipated black Negro slaves. That's back before they were called African Americans, which is a complete misnomer because theoretically John Kerry's wife is an African American. She was born in South Africa and speaks like 50 languages, including dolphin, apparently. Anyway, it talks about all the residents of the United States. So they've turned you into a resident. You're no longer a citizen of the sovereign state. You're a resident. If I'm an Irish citizen and I'm living in California, well, I'm a national of Ireland, but I'm a resident of the United States. It basically declares illegal status that says you can't own land or guns or anything else. But those regulations correspond, once again, to this IRC Section 1, which doesn't create a specific liability for taxes imposed. Therefore, these regulations are an overly broad extension of the underlying statutory authority, and as such, they are unconstitutional, null and void, and ab initio from the beginning. Acker case cited above held that the federal regulations could not exceed the underlying statutory authority. Yes, interrupting, Dolphin.
I was a little bit curious. A thought was popping in my head because I know that we have listeners from the United Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
Is there a relationship between how the states have been wrangled into Washington, D.C., the way that the United Kingdom is put together as in the way that it is?
Not really, because remember, they're not citizens, they're subjects.
Well, I know
the Queen. So once again, there's only one sovereign, there's only one individual that's allowed to own land and guns, and that's the Queen. They didn't fight a revolution. they may have tried to blow up Parliament, Guy Fawkes and his buddies.
Sure.
They have tried to blow up Parliament in 1605, but not really. I mean, in Ireland, they have a case, because in Ireland, Ireland was an independent country from Britain from about 1919 until about 1923 or so, when the British came in again. It's sort of like Scotland. Scotland wanted independence, but they were perfectly happy to allow England and the Queen to continue to control the courts and continue to control the banks. Well, if you control the courts and the banks, you don't have any freedom. And it doesn't matter who makes the laws. We can't enforce them with the courts. And it really, as I think it was Rothschild who said, again, you let me print the money and I care not who runs the country, because you can control everything. And of course, Thomas Jefferson, as we have this new bumper now, says that banks are far more dangerous than standing armies, which, you know, because they eat out the lifeblood of the citizens. And by the way, here we have two classes of citizens. There they have subjects. We have state citizens and federal citizens. State citizen, capital C, because citizen was capitalized in the Constitution until you get to this 14th Amendment, which even I think it was Jay. Was it Jay at that time? No, I don't think it was. I don't think it was that far, but it was Jefferson, Madison, and Jay that wrote the Federalist Papers. And the 16th Amendment would have been 65 years later. But whoever the dissenting opinion of the Supreme Court in an opinion on the 14th Amendment was basically saying that this is not only the worst piece of legislation that's ever been foisted upon the Anglo-Saxon race, but that it reintroduced the concept of European feudalism, which we had fought so hard to throw off, into America. You know, the bottom line is if you're British. Now, this is what's interesting is that there was a young man in Seattle that had filed 1099 OID paperwork, which is original issue discount paperwork, and was filing them for Canadian citizens. And they got something like $14 million back. And then the IRS and this kid made, I think, $100,000 charging people to actually file the paperwork and do whatever it was. And the IRS, they came after him. They eventually couldn't do anything to him, really, because he's filling out their paperwork. you know, they tried to say that, oh, he's ripping off these people. We got them $14 million, for God's sakes. How is that ripping somebody off for doing a service of $100,000, which represents, I think, whatever the percentage is, of $14 million? That's not bad. But he got $14 million for various people filing the 1099 OID process, which once again is the IRS's paperwork. And yet if you get a refund back from them using their paperwork and they don't like it, they'll come along later and say that the refund was somehow erroneous or it's frivolous or it's denied. And the 1099 OID original issue discount that went along with the 1040 was in TurboTax up until 2010. And then IRS got mad about the fact that people discovered that they could get basically all the money that they processed through a bank or a credit card back, including giving the federal government withholding of like 38% or so. And the IRS didn't like it. And of course, people were going to court. And you know, they were going to court just saying, look, I filed your paperwork. I went to a CPA. I filed the paperwork as instructed. And they tried to say, well, this is only for banks. Well, every man, woman, and child in the United States, actually, well, if you're over the age of majority of, you know, 18 or 21, you can be a bank. I mean, I can take money on deposit. I can pay you interest. I can do whatever. Anyway, but the first class originates in the qualifications clause of the U.S. Constitution with the term citizen and capital. Citizen of the United States is uppercase C is citizen. So the pertinent court cases have defined the term United States to mean states united. The full term means citizen of one of the states united. In other words, the union. People versus deal.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Imagine, just imagine.
Imagine a world
where every child and adult will have the opportunity to achieve their dreams.
I believe my inspiration is the answer.
My inspiration is the greatest light,
the greatest energy.
It was born when the universe was sparked into life.
It's within everything.
My inspiration transforms pain into happiness
and failure into success.
My inspiration inspires lives.
It inspires lives.
It inspires human lives.
My inspiration is always shining like the sun.
But it doesn't mean that it's alive.
For centuries, my inspiration was in prison.
In prison.
In prison.
It doesn't belong there.
Its home is to be known to all people.
My inspiration is in trouble.
We are fighting for its life right now.
Right this moment.
This moment.
Millions all over the world want to go beyond their limitations.
Liberate their dreams and reach success.
The failure of us all to be someone
is the biggest disease
of all time.
Each day our brothers and sisters die.
Please help us to birth this inspiration to life.
And that will stop this disease.
Help us get the word out of our inspiration.
Help us.
Help us.
It's our shared belief for a better future beyond the horizon.
Let's write the future.
Heroism is here.
Stand up and grasp it.
Stand up.
Stand up and grasp it.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up for the dreams of all people.
This is Nighthawk from Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now it's your time to stand up and make a difference or fade away.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
On the go? Still want to listen? Don't have one of those fancy phones with too many buttons? Don't know what an app is? Or you don't even care? Well, we got you here at Revolution Radio. Now you can dial in 24/7 to listen to our shows. We have a number for Studio A and Studio B, and best of all, it's free. Don't forget, your carrier charges for your cell phone provider may apply, though, so check with your cell provider to make sure. So ready? Here you go. Get a pen. Here's the number. Studio A is 712 712- 432-6958. And Studio B is 716-748-0112. Thank you very much for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station in the world.
Time, an epic story spanning 40 years in the life of Dr. Ted Humphrey and his involvement with time travel, Area 51,
the Dulce Missile,
the Montauk Project,
the Shadow Government,
and Dr. Humphrey's meteoric rise to become head of an all-powerful global organization engaged in a desperate race against time to save our world. At 17, Ted's father, a brilliant government scientist, disappears, and Ted makes it his life's mission to discover his father's fate. This leads to him being drafted into beyond top-secret projects, making the most valuable machine ever built, a device that can move through space and time. As time tech is developed, Ted is taken inside an elite clandestine group of men dedicated to hiding a deadly truth that forces from beyond the stars could lead to Earth's destruction. Ted gets guidance from people further down and outside the time stream, never knowing who he can trust, while still seeking to solve his father's disappearance. Sands of Time is truly remarkable, a rare look behind the curtain of the black world of super technology, and shows us once again that all we have come to accept as reality.
And now, for the very first time, Sands of Time, Volume 1, is now available in paperback for only $25. Read the book that Amazon ranked 5 stars. Also, in ebook and dynamic voice spoken word audio, all at Amazon or StrangeUniverseRadio.com.
Read this book and never be the same.
This is JP from Journeys with JP. You're listening to Revolution Radio. And now back to Sean David Morton with Strange Universe.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. When you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. Have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it.
See from planet to planet and star to shining star. Radio, it is I, Dr. Sean David Morton, PhD. As ever, it falls to me to inoculate the hopelessly ignorant with the potent pharmacological meds of explanation. Confusion reigns, the bitter pill marked, what the F is going on here? Lodged in their throats. But fear not, my dim-witted colleagues. I am here to inject the infectious filth of your bewilderment. The war that's been going on for, well, 200 years since the founding of this country. And they won it a long time ago. They, whether or not it was a corporation. And the bottom line is that there's been a coup at some point in the development of this nation. You couldn't have a nation with everybody just running around free. For the first time in 5,000 years, we came closer to having a truly kingless, if you will, utopian society. The closest that we could have come to the actual laws and codes of the Bible, of the Mosaic Code, if you will. As close as we can get. And There was, and it just started, it began to fracture almost right away. It began to fracture when the British, when we set up the Bank of the United States, which was designed to basically pay tribute to the British, and eventually when the Congress actually then paid reparations to the British to the tune of something like 600,000 pounds sterling, to basically say, well, we're sorry for costing you money for us fighting for our freedom. And again, how many classes of citizen are there, and how did this number come to be? So since Selma and all these people marched across a bridge to supposedly get their civil rights, which doesn't make any sense. You really want civil rights that are privileges that are granted to you by the state that can be taken away by the state at any time? Or do you want God-given rights? Inalienable, which really is inalienable, which means you as the human being cannot be leaned. But they lean you every day because there's two classes of citizen. There's the state citizens and federal citizens. And the first class originates in the Qualifications Clause of the U.S. Constitution, where the term citizen, capitalized as the sovereign of the United States, also capitalized instead of the United small u capital S states, is used. Because you notice there's an uppercase C in citizen. And the pertinent court cases have defined the term United States in these clauses to mean states united or the union. And the full term means citizens, a citizen of one of the states united. And this is People versus De La Guerra. Judge Pablo De La Guerra signed the California Constitution of 1849 when California first joined the union. As a republic, we were the California Republic. And the feds actually came in and took us over. They actually threw out the republic and made us a federal territory. But there's a lot of similar terms that are found in what's called the Diversity Clause of Article 3, Section 2, Clause 1 of the U.S. Constitution, and the Privileges and Immunities Clause. Because prior to the Civil War, there was only one class of capital C citizen under American law. Court cases Pannell versus Roanoke. The second class now originates in 1866. What do we do with the Negro? What do we do with slaves that have now been emancipated, who are can't read, can't write, mostly buck ignorant, and now are given the same rights somehow as white Caucasians at that time, but still not Indians? Indians were denizens and came under a separate civilization. So where the term citizen, small c, of the United States is used. So this act was later codified as 42 U.S.C. 1983, and there's a lowercase c in citizen after the 14th Amendment. The pertinent court cases have held that Congress thereby created a municipal franchise primarily for members of the Negro race, again, who were freed by Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, which was a war measure. And by the way, he didn't free anybody in the actual states. It was, he said that where slavery was illegal now, it was going to stay illegal, and any other territories that were absorbed by the Union, like, you know, New Mexico, Arizona, California, whatever. Well, California's already in, but that slavery wouldn't be used there. So he never really freed anybody while he was alive. But later, by the 13th Amendment, banning slavery and involuntary servitude. Of course, they had to get around that because how do you have a draft if there's no involuntary servitude? How do you force people to collect taxes for you if you have laws against involuntary servitude? But it compels payment of a tax for which there's no liability statute and is tantamount to, again, involuntary servitude and extortion. So instead of using the unique term federal citizen, which is actually found in Black's Law, 6th edition, it's clear that the radical Republicans who sponsored the 1866 Civil Rights Act were attempting to confuse these two classes of citizens. This was a specific deception. Because then they attempted to then elevate the second class of citizen to constitutional status by proposing the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And as we know, the proposal was, well, it was never legally ratified, but you're never going to get away with that in court. But numerous court cases have now struggled to clarify the important differences between the two classes. When you go to get a passport, they won't even tell you the law. They just say, well, citizenship in the United States is complicated. Is it? Yeah, it is, because are you a state citizen and a U.S. national? Again, I tried, and I did not have an affidavit, mind you, but I did try to get my passport as a national, as a U.S. national, saying, look, I was not born within the United States, all capital letters. I was born within the California Republic under the Organic Constitution of 1849. And the black lady behind the counter was like, well, you got to decide where you're born, boy. You don't sound Samoan to me. Are you Samoan? No. Well, if you're not born in Samoan, then you can't be a national. You're born in Puerto Rico? No, I was born in the California Republic, which is foreign, non-domestic, to the United States, which is only 10 square miles of Washington, D.C. Click. She hung up the phone on me. Six times she hung up the phone. And by the way, first they wanted my high school records, sent my stuff back. Then they wanted my college records, sent my stuff back. And by the third time, they wanted my birth certificate, sent that all back. And then they wanted the birth certificates of my brothers and sisters. And when it got to the point where now they're asking me for something illegal, that's when I had to call them on the phone. A woman hung up on me six times until I actually just threatened her, said, I'm going to make you my personal hobby. I'm going to find you. And civil service probably shouldn't be what you should be doing, because you're certainly not civil and you're not servile. But one of the most definitive and dispositive cases is Pennell versus Roanoke, where it's clearly held that federal citizens had no standing to sue under the diversity clause because they were not even contemplated when Article 3 in the U.S. Constitution was first being drafted in 1787. And by the way, it was used to get certain civil rights, yes, for Negroes, African Americans, but it was mostly used by corporations, or maybe a few lawsuits that were actually brought to elevate the black man in the United States, but the corporations were going crazy. They were suing like crazy. There's another case called Ex Parte Knowles, which is 1855, in which the California Supreme Court ruled that there was no such thing as a citizen of the United States, small c. This is in 1855. Only federal citizens have standing to now invoke 42 U.S.C. 1933, whereas state citizens do not. So there's all kinds of cases that can be cited to confirm the existence of two classes of citizens under American law. And these cases are thoroughly documented. There's a book called The Federal Zone, Cracking the Code of Internal Revenue. And it's by Paul Andrew Mitchell, who's a BA and an MS. It's in its 11th edition. It's The Federal Zone, Cracking the Code of Internal Revenue by Paul Andrew Mitchell. You can also see pleadings in the case of USA versus Gilbertson, if you're listening to this on tape or as a recording, but that's also in the Supreme Court Library. Can you be a state citizen without also being a federal citizen? Absolutely, yes. So the 1866 Civil Rights Act was municipal law. It was only municipal law because it only was the Congress of the United States with its municipal power over Washington, D.C. But because they make all of you citizens of Washington, D.C., and now you're a resident in the state. See how it works? If I'm a citizen of Ireland living here, I'm an Irish national, but as a resident of the United States, which basically makes me an illegal alien. Because the municipal law was confined, again, to the 10 square miles of the District of Columbia and limited areas where Congress is actually the state government of Washington, D.C., which is why it's so weird that you just had a mayor who just decided that pot is going to be legal in Washington, D.C., even though it's in violation of federal law. So theoretically, because it's now legal in Washington, D.C., you can actually use that, I think, claiming to be a federal citizen, which means that's your domicile, really. That should make pot legal for everybody who's a federal citizen now. Because how are you going to prosecute somebody who's considered a, quote, U.S. citizen when pot is actually legal in their home, if you will, which is the United States, which is, again, Washington, D.C. So these areas are identified as the federal zone. So think of it as the blue field on the American flag. That's the federal zone, and the stars on the flag are all the 50 states. And the 1866 Civil Rights Act had no effect whatsoever upon the lawful status of state citizens, and it doesn't have an effect then, and it doesn't have an effect now. But several courts have already recognized our right to be state citizens without becoming federal citizens. There's State versus Fowler. There's Gardena versus Board of Registrars. The Maine Supreme Court clarified the issue by explaining our right of election or freedom of choice, namely our freedom to choose between two different forms of government. But since the Guarantee Clause does not require the federal government to guarantee a Republican form of government to the federal zone, Congress is free to create a different form of government there, and it has. In his dissenting opinion in Downs versus Bidwell, that's 1901, actually, the Supreme Court Justice Harlan called it an absolute legislative democracy. But state citizens are under no legal obligation to join or pledge any allegiance to that legislative democracy. Their allegiance is to one or more of the several states of the Union, like the California Republic. That's the white stars on the American flag, not the blue field, which is the federal zone. There's a really important Supreme Court case Frank Buschaber. And he was the plaintiff in a case of Buschaber versus Union Pacific Railroad. This is 1916, the first U.S. Supreme Court case to consider the so-called 16th Amendment. And Buschaber identified himself as a citizen, capital C, of New York State and a resident of the borough of Brooklyn in the city of New York. And nobody challenged that claim. So the Union Pacific Railroad was a federal corporation that was created by an act of Congress to build a railroad through Utah from the Union to the Pacific at a time when Utah was a federal territory inside what was considered the federal zone. So Buschaber's attorney committed an error by arguing that the company had been chartered by the state of Utah, but Utah wasn't a state of the Union when Congress first created that corporation. So Buschaber had purchased stock issued by the company, and then he sued the company to recover taxes that Congress had imposed upon the dividends paid to all of the stockholders. And the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Frank Buschaber ruled against him and upheld the tax as a lawful excise or an indirect tax. And the most interesting result of the court's ruling was a Treasury decision that the U.S. Department of the Treasury later issued as a direct consequence of the High Court's opinion. In the U.S. Treasury Department expressly cited the Buschaber decision and it identified Frank Buschaber as a non-resident alien and the Union Pacific Railroad Company as a domestic corporation. Why? Because it was federal, which makes it domestic. All the sovereign states are foreign non-domestic to the United States. And so this Treasury decision has never been modified or repealed. So Treasury Decision 2313 is this critical evidence proving that the income tax provisions of the IRC are municipal law with no territorial jurisdiction inside the 50 states of the Union. And the United States Secretary of the Treasury, who improved Treasury Decision 2313, had no authority to extend the holding in the Buschaber case to anyone or anything not a proper party to that particular court action. So there's no escaping the conclusion that Frank Buschaber was the non-resident alien to which the Treasury decision refers. And accordingly, all state citizens are non-resident aliens with respect to the municipal jurisdiction of the Congress, which is the federal zone. So, okay, a lot of people want to know how to, you know, how do you get out of stuff? How do you, you know, what do you do about your W-4? Well, there's a withholding exemption certificate. This is key because people have asked me, well, Sean, how do I get out of all this? Well, a withholding exemption certificate is an alternative to form W-4. Now, it's authorized by the IRC Section 3402, and it's executed in lieu of form W-4. Now, although Section 3402N does authorize this certificate, the IRS has never added a corresponding form to its forms catalog, because they actually have a printed products catalog of forms you can get. But in the absence of an official IRS form, workers can use the language of Section 3402N to create their own certificates. And in simple language, the worker certifies that he or she had no federal income tax liability last year and anticipates no federal income tax liability during the current calendar year. And because there are no liability statutes for workers in the private sector, the certification is easy to justify. So that gets you into their system. That allows you to work and indemnifies your employer. And all these public and private institutions have created their own form of the withholding exemption certificate. For example, the California Franchise Tax Board, Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. And it's a fact that can be confirmed by using any search engine. Go to google.com to locate occurrences of the term withholding exemption certificate on the internet. And the term occurs several times in the Internal Revenue Code, Section 3402. And by the way, what is tax evasion? Who might be guilty of this crime? Tax evasion is the crime of evading a lawful tax. Well, in the context, and when anybody asks me, I pay all lawful taxes. I pay every lawful tax. I pay a tax on gas. I pay a tax on electricity. I pay a sales tax. I pay a gas tax. You know how many taxes you take? Outside of the federal taxes, you're just walking around. You know how many taxes you pay every day? Because in the context of federal income taxes, this crime can only be committed by persons who have a legal liability to pay, i.e. the withholding agent. And if one is not employed by the federal government, then one is not subject to the Public Salary Tax Act unless you choose to be treated as if one is a federal government employee. And this is typically done by executing a valid form W-4. So the W-4 is not mandatory, by the way, for workers who are not employed by the federal government. Corporations chartered by the 50 states of the union are technically foreign corporations with respect to the Internal Revenue Code. They are decidedly not the federal government and should not be regarded as if they are the federal government, particularly when they were never created by any act of Congress. So the Indiana Supreme Court ruled that Congress can only create a corporation in its capacity as the legislature for the federal zone, which is Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, and anything it directly owns, like military bases or post offices. So these corporations are the only domestic corporations under the pertinent federal laws. So if Congress were authorized to create national corporations, then such a questionable authority would invade states' rights reserved to them by the 10th Amendment, namely the right to charter their own domestic corporations. The repeal of prohibition, by the way, left the 10th Amendment unqualified. So, for example, you can have – we ran into this with these idiots at the Securities and Exchange Commission. There can be 50 limited liability corporations in 50 states that all have the exact same name that are owned by different people. And the entire case of these idiots of the SEC was they found a company that had the same name as us in Florida that was a real estate holding company. And they threw a bunch of papers at us saying, where are you hiding $6.5 million? And we're like, this isn't even us. Do you guys know that there can be 50 companies with 50 different names? No. So back when we had a lawyer, even the completely incompetent one sort of laughed in their face. That was their entire case. And then they spent all this money to do whatever it is they were going to do, and they had to continue with something. So they just pulled some out of their hat. Oh, you're a bad psychic, which was their case. You predicted that stuff was going to happen. You predicted the stock market, and you were wrong about gold and silver. That was their entire case. And again, it would have taken $100,000 to fight it, so we fought the jurisdiction, and that's how we beat them. So the term employer refers only to federal government agencies. And by the way, an employee is a person who works for such an employer. An employer is only federal agencies. So here's where it's interesting. The IRS 1040, why does the IRS Form 1040 not require a notary public to notarize a taxpayer's signature? Well, this is the fastest way to unravel the fraudulent nature of an income tax. 28 U.S.C. Section 1746, Congress authorized written verifications to be executed under penalty of perjury without the need for a notary, i.e. somebody to witness your signature. So the statute identifies two different formats. One, those executed outside the United States, which again, Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, and those executed inside the United States. So these two formats correspond to Section 1746.1 and 1746.2, respectively. So what's extremely revealing in this statute is the format for verifications executed outside the United States. And in this latter format, the statute adds the qualifying phrase, quote, under the laws of the United States of America. And clearly, United States and United States of America are both used in the same statute, and they are not one and the same. The former refers to the federal government in the U.S. Constitution and throughout most federal statutes, and the latter, United States of America, refers to the 50 states that are united by and under the U.S. Constitution. And it actually should be small U, United States, maybe small s or capital S, of America. But 28 U.S.C. 1746 is the only federal statute in all of Title 28 of the United States Code that utilizes the term United States of America as such. So it's painfully, if not immediately obvious, that verifications made under penalty of perjury are now outside the United States or the federal zone if and when they are executed inside the 50 states of the Union. Likewise, the verifications made under penalty of perjury are now outside the 50 states of the Union if and when they're executed inside the United States. So the format for signatures on the 1040 is one for verifications made inside the United States, the federal zone, and outside the United States of America. And of course, the United States has all kinds of multiple legal meanings, but and here's the real big one. Is the term income defined in the IRC? And if not, where is it defined? This is the big one. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals has already ruled that the term income is not defined anywhere in the Internal Revenue Code. The general term income is not identified in the Internal Revenue Code. This is U.S. versus Ballard. Moreover, in Eisner v. Machomer, the High Court told Congress it could not legislate any definition of income because that term was believed to be in the U.S. Constitution. And the Eisner case was predicated on the ratification of the 16th Amendment, which would have introduced the term income into the U.S. Constitution for the very first time, but only if that amendment had been properly ratified, which, again, you're never going to win. So the High Court defined income to mean profit or gain derived from corporate activities. And in that instance, the tax is a lawful excise tax imposed upon corporate privilege of limited liability, i.e. the liabilities of a corporation do not reach its officers, employees, directors, or stockholders. So there it is. I mean, what is municipal law, and are the IRC's income tax provisions municipal law or not? Yes, the IRC's income tax provisions are municipal law. A municipal law that's enacted to govern the internal affairs of a sovereign state in legal circles. It's also known as the private international law. So anyway, okay, we're almost out of time here. Let me see. Okay, so I'm going to be in Florida this weekend. So we're going to talk about I think we were going to have Mia Maria Pope here on Friday, but I'm not sure I'm going to be here Friday. So I'm going to be at the New Life Expo at the Broward Convention Center in Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So if you want to come over from Boca, drive your 1955 Buick Roadmaster with your beehive hair and your little cat eyeglasses. Come on over. And then the next week, I'm going to be in New York at the New Life Expo at the beautiful, amazing Pennsylvania Hotel directly across the street from Madison Square. Anyway, it's educational. Hopefully, you can put it in place with friends and hopefully.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Listen in on Mondays, 8 Eastern Time on Revolution Radio for Journeys with JP, with a variety of guests, each giving their perspective on their journey into the now. Join me and my guests Mondays, 8 p.m. Eastern on Revolution Radio Studio B.
Every Tuesday evening on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, we present our goddess spiritual warrior, Kathy Bilski.
I command. I call to the architect of the universe's divine creators and ask for permission to quantum leap the world and all life forms on all planes and dimensions, seen and unseen, connected with planet Earth, to let us go beyond our known potential into the greatest unknown golden age.